Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Bravo, macht Tempo, wartet auf Harte. Zwanke kommt und jetzt ist es Klos. Also Arminia Bielefeld.
Penny, 2-0. 2-0 für den FC St. Pauli.
Diese
Flanke, Tor, nächster Treffer.
Ist heuer Fernandes mit vorne. Ja klar ist er mit vorne. Kittel mit der Ecke, Feuerball und da!
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. We have done it. We've made it through the Hinrunde, 17 match days in arrears, and we still have not really a clear enough picture on what's going to be happening in terms of promotion and relegation. But what we do know is that there is going to be an exciting fight as we enter the Rückrunde, which will start, if you're listening to this on the Tuesday, will start today. As the match day 18 games get underway today, which is very, very exciting. But of course, you are here to hear our thoughts on what transpired on the weekend that was. And we saw a ton of goals, some big wins, which we are going to talk about, and teams that are starting to enter a precarious situation, that is for sure. As always, my co-host, my teammate, good friend, Eva Lotte-Bohler. Eva, pleasure as always to have you alongside me to talk Zweite Bundesliga. It is the only safe haven of football that we can really talk about at the moment.
That is very true. I watch a lot of football this weekend, and it's always great to come back to Zweite Bundesliga after watching a lot of Bundesliga games. And I'm very happy that we have this match day to talk about, because there were some surprising results and some very weird mistakes that have been made.
Yeah, absolutely. If you do want to hear Eva in particular, she was on the Rasenfunk, which is the pinnacle of Bundesliga podcasts in the German language. If you want to listen to her for 3 hours alongside Max, do so. You can find that on Spotify. We like the Rasenfunk, so we're happy to plug them. Let's talk Zweite Bundesliga football, because that is what you're here to listen to. And let's start with the game that brought plenty of goals and the spoils were shared. Fortuna Düsseldorf and Greuther Fürth. This game was very efficient in the way it ran in terms of goals. You look at it, 16 shots on goal in total for the game, 6 goals. And it started with an Andre Hoffmann owned goal, followed by Julian Green finish, his 5th of the season, to make it 2-0. And when it seemed like Fürth were about to run away with it, Kenan Karaman scoring on 35 minutes, and then Christopher Pedersen just after half time. Sebastian Ernst got his 6th of the campaign just moments later. And then the set piece that garnered quite a lot of discussion on 82 minutes when Florian Kastenmeier came up. Very unusual to see a keeper come up that early, despite being a goal down. He acted as the decoy, Kevin Danso getting the equaliser. The XG suggests that the score shouldn't have been as it was, but it was a thoroughly efficient and a good advertisement for the game in the Zweite Bundesliga.
Yeah, and I thought it was a really good game in general. I mean, it started off a bit, not that well, but then, as you said, Andre Hoffmann started to score, and I thought that, that Fortuna found a very good way fighting back. Well, I think it was a very important goal that Karaman scored that before halftime, because it's always easier if you're only one goal down, if your goal's down, then two, because you can always say we can come back. We have another 45 minutes, but you could see that they were actually good enough to score, and they could, not easily, but they could have nearly won in the end. I think Sobotka missed that shot last minute. And I do have to say that Fortuna had a good display against Fürth. I mean, Fürth is the best away team in the league, so it's not a shame to end a game like this. And Fürth would have needed a bit more points to actually, troubling Fortuna in the situation they are at the moment. So I think Fortuna especially in 2021, is on a very good way. And it's important that they didn't lose that game if you look at the other results of the weekend. And yeah, but for example, before the 1-2, I thought it was a good work by Hennings. You normally only see him as the goal scorer, not much the one that gives assists. But I thought it was a very good chip by him in midfield. So that was good work as well. And yeah, of course, that Kastenmeier going forward, it was a bit weird. I looked at the time, I was like, it's 82 minutes. It's a bit early to do that, especially if you're so close into the game. It can go horribly wrong. But yeah, he did a good job taking leveling away from Danso. And yep, if that works, you kind of one of the men of the matches. But yeah. Most of the goals from Fortuna came out of open play. They're not that well from set pieces in this game. And, well, there might be, like, most of the shots are, shot zones are the penalty area, not that much outside of the box. And they might find a way how it's most effective for them to score goals, which is good as long as... Yeah, the opponents do not figure that out. But two last people I want to talk about is actually Marco Meierhofer. I think we don't see a lot of him maybe at the beginning of the season, but he is increasingly important for the Fürth team. And with Fürth probably losing one of the best players at the moment in David Raum, he might go to Hoffenheim at the end of the season. I think you could see that Fürth is developing a lot of good players that you might not heard about before, but I think that's really good work for them. And as well as Peterson for Düsseldorf, he came in as a sub and had the most shots on goal for Fortuna. So that's another good anchor for Fortuna Düsseldorf.
Yeah, no doubt. I will say... it is so interesting to see how Fortuna have developed this season. Early on in the campaign, they would have lost this game. Once it had got to 2-0, put the curtain down, game over. But there is the resolve and resilience within the squad now, especially when you're now 7 games unbeaten since that 5-0 demolition at the hands of VfL Bochum. You know, they're really starting to get it together. It's no mistake that they're now... firmly in the top 5. They did lose a place and they're now outside the top 3, but they're very much in the hunt. They have Hamburg in midweek. If they can take points off Hamburg, you know, they are more than just in principle a title challenger. They are firmly in the raffle to make sure that they're not only a champion, but a promotion guarantee. We will see. We'll keep that in mind as we go further. As we mentioned Hamburg just before, they went to Eintracht Braunschweig for their game on the weekend, and well, they didn't have a great start to this game and they gave up some pretty ordinary goals. Felix Kors scoring from inside the 6-yard box to open the scoring, and then a defensive error from Tony Leisner ensured that Marcel Baer got his second of the campaign, and it made it 2-0. Critically, David Kinsombi scored a goal just before half-time, and that really turned the tide for Hamburg. Simon Terodde getting his 17th goal of the campaign, making it 2 goals apiece. Aaron Hunt, and then Kinsombi for his second of the game to give Hamburg all 3 points. It was really a Kinsombi show in the second half, but it has to be said, though, that Braunschweig really... played a critical role in their own downfall.
Yeah, I was surprised then on how good they started. I mean, it's now the 7th game, I think 7th game in a row without a win for them. And I really liked how they started into that game. I mean, it's always good to score that early, especially to just keep Hamburg a bit off bay at the beginning. And I thought this game was in general was a tale of individual mistakes, which we know from Braunschweig this season. We did not know that much from HSV, I have to say. But you can really see, I mean, those were the games Hamburg in the last two seasons would have probably still have lost. And I really like the way how they fought back, of course, with a lot of help by Braunschweig. I mean, that Behrendt mistake, it doesn't look really good. He doesn't look well. And then Fezic, and I think then it was, I don't remember, but I was on Braunschweig's left side where they just don't attack them enough. And you could just say from a part at some stage in the game, I think it was before the 1-2 actually, that Kroos, if you look at that tackle between Kroos and Kittel just nearly puts Kroos where he wants him, and Kroos just stands there and doesn't do anything more. And I was a bit disappointed on how Braunschweig reacted in the second half. There was not much to be done from them there, and I thought they would build up on that first half, which was good until HSV scored. So the problem is that Braunschweig needs wins, because if you look at the results, if you look that we will speak about that later, like for example, Sandhausen got points, St. Pauli won, they do really need a win. It's not naturally this game where they need to pick up points, but if you start a game like that and you actually score goals against a team that is the Hinrundenmeister, you should find ways. And if it's the not really nice way to just stand in your own half with 11 people, it's not a pretty football to watch, but it secures you points. And I thought that they were a bit too lazy with that.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, again, they are still tinkering to figure out what their best setup is defensively. Umar Diakate made his debut. He was a free agent and last applied his trade in Portugal. My concern for them is that Braunschweig are entering not only a critical stage for them in the season in terms of trying to get out of the bottom three, but they have some colossally difficult games that could really put them in a critical situation down the stretch. So they play Heidenheim tonight. They play Heidenheim tonight, and then they follow that with games against Kiel, Hanover, Bochum, and then they are playing against Jahn Regensburg. Those four games before that are incredibly hard. They take any points from those games that will have some bearing towards that match day 22 game. If they strike out and fail to get anything, they are in serious trouble. I think the fact that, as Eva mentioned, Sandhausen getting a point, St. Pauli, who we're going to talk about later, winning, it's becoming problematic, and they just defensively, it's just inconsistent. And yeah, they're in serious trouble at the moment. Hamburg extend their lead at the top of the table. Things are looking good for them. And we shall finish our Groupon games with Kiel, who made the journey to Darmstadt. Darmstadt continued their plummet down the table, and result-wise, their fourth consecutive defeat. It was a 2-0 result for the visitors. And the goal from Fabian Riese just before half-time, he was very energetic in the way he played. He provided plenty of options going forward. He had a number of good chances. He probably should have had more than a goal. And then Emmanuel Hearn was in the wrong place at the wrong time in a set piece, 10 minutes after half time. And that was all she wrote. Darmstadt did summon some sort of life after going 2-0 down, but really it was another limp performance that sees them, surprisingly, only 3 points above the relegation playoff spot. We talk about it off air quite a bit, Eva, but 17 match days in, it would be fair to say that where Darmstadt are now is nowhere near where we thought they would be this time in the season.
Yeah, not at all. I have to say, when I watched the game, I was highly disappointed the way Darmstadt played. They were not to be seen in the first half at all. And I have to say that I still don't really know where Marcus Anfang is going with his plan. I do not see a clear pattern. I have the feeling that the whole game relies on how Tobias Kempe and Sarah Duzun perform. And of course, Duzun was subbed in because he was out injured. And I think that's not something that Darmstadt should do because they have enough players that are fit, that fit the team, that fit the description that you might expect of a team like Darmstadt. And I mean, we've seen that team perform last season under Gamotzes, and I just you could really see that, for example, the likes of Marcel Schoen, he was quite good in goal, but you could see how he got angrier and angrier with each save he had to make. And well, Kiel wasn't as they kind of laid out their whole game in the first half, and then they just brought it home. And for Darmstadt, it wasn't like unlucky that, I mean, of course, if you concede an own goal, that's always unlucky. But I'm quite sure there would have been another Kiel player who would have easily scored that goal. And I always had the feeling Kiel was closer to scoring a third or even a fourth goal than Darmstadt was in scoring at all. Well, the only good news that Darmstadt can probably take from this match day is that Tobias Kempe extended his contract until 2023. That's at least one of the key players of that game that can keep. And I thought that just when Darmstadt, I think they had that three shots on target, but they were came all it was Mai Kempe and Berko. They came all from a very central position, or and the two times they were outside of the box, and I thought they had too less variability in the way they wanted to score a goal that Kia just, well, I mean, every shot that comes clearly towards Gilios is an easy shot for him because he's a very good goalkeeper. I mean, he saved all three shots against him, and I was a bit disappointed that at some stage you had the feeling Darmstadt just wanted to score like a team that just got promoted to the Zweite Bundesliga would will go on and score a goal. I had that feeling at some stage in the game. And I think that Darmstadt really, really has to look out, because if you look at the table, if you look at the points that I have or not have, and a team's growing stronger, they're not a team I would count into that group, especially because it's their fourth defeat in a row.
Yeah, and we spoke about it last week how they need to have time, but if you exclude St. Pauli, Regensburg, they've in their mix, they have the equal third most defeats, nine defeats. That's not, and again we spoke about this last week where they don't have problem scoring goals. Their defense is just all at sea. And it was proven again on the weekend where if it wasn't for Marcel Schoen, who, if you look in terms of goalkeeper rankings, isn't in the top 10. And a lot of that has to do with how bad he's got it in front of him. But it's becoming an issue where how long will Marcus Anfang remain interested in trying to turn it around, and how patient are the Darmstadt board that they were going to keep him around? I feel there is not a lot of confidence within the Darmstadt fan community that the people running the club at the moment are fulfilling the best interest of the club as a whole. And this is what you get, this kind of disconnected performance as we've seen on the pitch. And when it seems Dursun and Kemper aren't on the pitch at the same time, they are just not really offering too much. And it showed. Good win for Kiel. Riese scoring his first goal since match day 20 against Karlsruhe last season. So that is an important stat, and one that Kiel fans will hope it means they move into third for the time being. Let's take our first break, and on the other side, we are going to head to the Max Morlock Stadion as Nuremberg hosts Hanover. Nuremberg were hoping to atone for their defeats last time out in Borkum when they hosted Hanover on the final match day of the Hinrunde. Unfortunately for them, as much as the snow was coming down, it seemed that the bit of clumsiness and defensive ineptitude crept in as they were absolutely smashed by a Hanover side determined to get themselves back in the promotion push. The final score was 5-2, and in frank terms, it probably should have been a lot more. Marvin Ducksch converting from the spot after a clumsy foul from Askar Sørensen. Timo Hubers just 4 minutes later made it 2. Manuel Schaefler made it interesting at 2-1, but then it was all Hanover from there. Genki Haraguchi, who was the man of the match in this game by a country mile, he scored to make it 3-1, and then a Florent Muslia free kick, the Koshman international, made it 4, before Patrick Tormasi made it 5. A consolation goal from Johannes Geis to score the second free kick of the game, but it really was a 5-star performance from Hanover. Eva, it's really difficult to describe what Nuremberg are going through at the moment. 3 defeats in their last 5. They are really struggling to pick up points, and it's really hard when you are the self-cause of why you're performing so poorly. In terms of defensive displays, they really let themselves down today.
Yeah. I mean, their first action in somehow involving the Hanover's half was actually the goal by Schaeffler, which was a good assist by Robin Hack, I thought. But, I mean, if you look at the statistics, they actually tell you a wrong tale, because it says that Nuremberg had 14 shots on goal, and I don't know when actually, because I did not see that. Okay, yeah, I mean, we talk about that off air, that foul by Sørensen. I mean, he, first of all, I think he kind of hugs Dux, and then he just does not let go. And it's such a stupid thing to do in that situation. And I mean, you have the feeling that action that goes is going forward is either incited by Geis or Hack, and then they just hope for Manuel Schaeffler to stand there and finish it, and yeah, tries to finish it. But yeah, I think that might be one of the reasons they signed Smala Daly on loan, a player I'm very, very keen to see back in the Zweite Bundesliga, although some like Pauli fans might be a bit bitter about that one. I really liked him the last time he was playing for St. Pauli. I think he is one of the players to watch out for in the next couple of weeks. I do not know if he will be able to help Nuremberg immediately, because he's not really coming from on loan from a lot of games that he plays, so he might need some time to find back into actually playing football games. I don't know what to say about Nuremberg else, because I have the feeling it's really the kind of copycatting what they did last season. And that's very worrying. For Hannover, they actually are evolving to be a good team, and I mean, they not solemnly hope for Dux to score, but they have now a huge variety of players that can actually find the back of the net. I mean, I thought that Florent Muslia, that free kick was good, although Martinha was not that well positioned in goal, you could say. But yeah, and then, of course, Haraguchi, who might leave the club at the end of the season because he's not happy what the club has offered him until now. And he says that he will, I think, re-evaluate what importance he is for the club. And I mean, it's safe to say that that is a huge importance, because he is one of the best players that team has, and it would be a very stupid move by Hannover to let him go, in my opinion, because he would be, if we talk about them going back to the Bundesliga at some stage, he would definitely be one of the players you want to have in your team. But yeah, in general, I really liked how Hannover played throughout the game. I mean, there was, at some stage, Essa had a really good save. He was really good in goal. I mean, we talked about last year where some of the goals were due to goalkeeping mistakes, and now you have someone who does do a really good job in goal. He had that save against Sørensen, if I'm not mistaken. It could have been a 2-3, and I'm not quite sure if Hannover, just from a point of view, would have bottled it in the end. But because in answer to that, they immediately scored, I think that was good going forward.
Yeah, and it is interesting because that moment really almost enabled Hannover just to carry on. At 3-2, you wonder if they would have been more defensive and passive and just try and hold on. But at 3-1, they felt that they had the tools to really go and push the envelope, and they did. It has to be said, though, you know, you can excuse the conditions for a bit, but even then, they are professional. And you, the ability to adapt to the surroundings is what makes the better teams thrive. And we saw that with Hannover in that game, their ability to adjust and just play their game compared to Nürnberg, who defensively, I'm pretty certain that the four defenders were wearing ice skates, not football boots, because they just really struggled. And Matenya, who has been okay without being spectacular, you know, there is probably going to be that talk that, do they start Christian Fuchtel, the goalkeeper on loan from Bayern Munich? Because there will be pressure from the brass at Bayern, who will be watching the progress closely and saying, hey, we think that this needs to happen. Of course, the Nürnberg coaching staff have the, you know, the say on who starts between the sticks, but it certainly feels as if that's going to only magnify if Matenya continues, you know, to struggle, and he was pretty poor again on the weekend. Good win for Hannover, and they will hope to get on the cusp of Greuther Fürth and Fortuna as the weeks come forward. Let's go to the Wildparkstadion when Karlsruhe hosted Heidenheim. This game was extraordinarily even, and the result was a goal apiece in the end. Robin Bormutz, the defender, made it 2 goals in 2 weeks for him, scoring from a set piece once again. But it has to be said, when Heidenheim needed a hero this season, it has been the one and only Christian Kulwetter. And once again, he scored. It's his 11th goal of the campaign, and what a goal it was on the hour mark. Outside the box, not really looking at the goal, and a glorious curling left foot into the side netting. And Marius Gersbeck was all but a passenger. Eva, I'm not sure your impressions of the game. From what I saw, it seemed relatively even. Both sides had their chances to go 2-1 up, but failed to do so. And I think both Christian Eichner and Frank Schmidt seemed rather content with sharing the points.
Yeah, I would agree to... I mean, I think Karlsruhe had the better chances to win that game. There was that Hoffmann header who hit the post after 51 minutes. Where it was just, I mean, it was, I think, cross came from Lorenz, really well pointed to Hoffmann, and he just hits the post. And then there was a shot by Philipp Heiser, which would have been a very good goal as well. And Korter had that offside goal as well. So if there would have been a winner, it would have given that one to Karlsruhe, because it would have been deserved, actually. Of course, Karlsruhe can live with that point because Heidenheim is still quite a strong team. But you have to say that the goalkeepers for both sides, they did an excellent job as well, in my opinion. And maybe in the end, both teams were a bit unlucky, but it was still a very good football game to watch, in my opinion, which would not have been the case maybe last season, where Kite School was keep struggling for not to get into relegation or getting relegated again. And I really liked what, if you compare them to Nuremberg, for example, I really liked how this team developed. It's not like not that natural to a team like Karlsruhe, and I do like how that game played out, that they never backed down. And of course, they have been a bit unlucky, and I mean, actually quite interesting, it's the first draw at the Wildparkstadion this season, so either Karlsruhe won or lost, but they never drew before this season at home, so this is the first. But yeah, Heidenheim put up a good fight as well, and as mentioned, was a 1-1 of the better sort.
Absolutely, I thought it was a quality game, and you know, we love to talk, in particular, I love to talk about goalkeeping, and you know, Kevin Muller's been a staple for a number of years, but Gersbeck had to earn his stripes this season. You know, with Benjamin Opoff going up to Freiburg, and you know, he's been solid, and that's what they've needed between the pipes. And you know, there was not a lot any keeper could have done to stop that 1-1. It was just such a glorious goal. But overall, I think Gersbeck's been quite good. Good points for both. It keeps them in the top half. I know Hamburg fans were happy to see Xavier Amiichi, who's on loan. He played 12 minutes. That's 12 minutes he's played more than he did at Hamburg. And it may seem that Christian Eichter will give him, for the meantime, a part role with the opportunity to start. I think talking to people within Hamburg, it could be, and it's an important spell for him, not only to get game time, but to prove that he, A, is at the level, but B, you know, he can be someone that Hamburg can take going forward and actually play with regularity. So his progress will be very important for both parties. Good for Karlsruhe if he hits the ground running, but also good for Hamburg in the long term. Let's go to our final Group 2 game, and that was in Sandhausen. They hosted Borkum. This game ended a goal apiece. Kevin Behrens self-assisting on the opening goal, a set piece that he rattled the post and self-followed up for the easy tap-in. And when it seemed as if Sandhausen were going to hold on, Robert Jule, the man, the myth, the legend. He's got 9 goals this season playing in central in the midfield for Borkum, and the game ended 1-1. It was a big day for Sandhausen because they showcased their new loan signings, Stefanos Capino, the former Greek international goalkeeper who's on loan from Werder Bremen, and Patrick Schmidt from Heidenheim. This is the second consecutive season where Schmidt has gone into a situation where he has got to help the team he has joined to try and avoid the drop. He didn't really endear himself in his first appearance. He was sent off after, I think it was like 20 minutes as a substitute. Very mixed bag. Eva, the impression I got was that Borkum were a bit shortchanged in the way that they played. And I really felt that Sandhausen were the better side. What do you think?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, Bochum had a couple of chances in the first half, but they weren't that dangerous that we know they can be. I mean, we've seen a couple of games where they scored at least 2 or 3 goals, and this wasn't one of them. Also, I'm not sure what you think about defending that Behrens goal, but in my opinion, Tesche is letting him lose a bit too easy. I mean, it's not, you can always talk about if it's a defender and he scores a header, that's something you can defend, but it is not that easy to defend. But I mean, Behrens is their striker. It's not the first time he scored a goal in that position. And I thought that the defending in general wasn't that good in that situation. On the other side, you have, for Bochum, I wouldn't fully put that goal on Robert Jule, but also on Eisfeld. I think his role in the Bochum team is increasing every week. If you compare it to the beginning of the season to last season, he always looked to be one of the players who might leave the club. And I mean, he is one of Bochum's best players concerning, or if you look at set pieces, and I mean, that set piece came from him. So I really like that one. I mean, in the end, Bochum really wanted that goal. So there was a lot of room for Sandhausen to have counter attacks, and they had that last one. And oh boy, if I would have been a Sandhausen fan watching that game, I would be very angry because Zauner is giving away that opportunity very easily. And it would have been a very good win for Sandhausen, especially, I know I keep saying that, but if you look at the rest of the results, they're not out of that zone. And still, a point against Bochum is a very good point, but they might be a bit sad, or not angry, but a bit disappointed that the chances they had, they did not use. In general, a good game for Sandhausen, not one of the best game for Bochum, but they have a chance to pick up points in the next game, especially in the English week.
Yeah, what a chance. That final counter-attack, the 3-on-2. Oh, boy. And I don't want to rib on him because that's totally unfair. But, oh, wow. It's the amount that he missed the target by. Oh, wow. I would say, in a way, that Sandhausen had a lot of these chances where they may have taken a second too long on the ball and allowed the Bochum defender to be able to intercept or put their body on the line to avoid a shot travelling on Manuel Riemann's goals. And that happened multiple times in the first half and the odd occasion in the second. And that really, you know, they could have pulled Bochum away in the first half. They were very, very good. And it wasn't until the first goal where, you know, Gamboa is too late in reacting to where the Bochum line is, and he plays Behrens onside, and then Behrens basically has not only a free header, but then has the follow-up. So, you know, the response was better in the second half. They still remain second, which is a positive, but the last thing they want if they really want to challenge for the title and promotion is to make sure they're within touching distance of Hamburg, because, you know, Hamburg will see themselves now, if they can beat Fortuna in midweek, they will see themselves as a title, they can run away with it, which is, you know, very, very possible. A news of note, although he doesn't play for Bochum anymore, but Lucas Hintzsehr on the move to Ulsan Hyundai in the K-League. He's joining up with the squad this week for their Asian Champions League tilt. Once again, the defending champions. So, yeah, best of luck to Lucas, who was a very solid Zweite Bundesliga striker and now seeking another opportunity. Let's take our final break. And on the other side, we are going to start with the all-purple game. It's Osnabrück and Erzgebirge Aue. Our final three games start at the Bremer Brücke when Osnabrück hosted Erzgebirge Aue. Osnabrück were hoping to snap a two-game losing streak, while Aue were trying to do something they don't do often, which is win away. One goal in this game, and it went to the visitors, John Patrick Strauss, scoring a header from the back post to give Aue the one and only goal in this game. And really, not a particularly eye-catching game for both sides, but what really stood out was the goalkeeping of Martin Mannl, who currently tied for first with most saves in the Zweite Bundesliga with 63 alongside Marcel Schoen, really produced another strong display. And with over 10 years of service, it's amazing how a club higher up potentially hasn't brought him in because he's been an unbelievable servant for Auer, and he was very good again on the weekend.
Yeah, there was this one situation. I don't remember who wanted to score a goal, but he was coming forward and managed to chip the ball away, ignoring the kind of kung fu acting that Subic player was doing. He just has a calmness in his saves, in his own attitude on the field, which is helping Auer a lot. I thought they wouldn't be, they would definitely not be in the situation they are if it would have been for Mene, and really good job by him. There was a weird kind of goalkeeping as well from Philipp Kühn, that shot where he was a bit lucky that his foot was up in the air, otherwise it would have been 2-0 for Auer. But in general, not a good game by Osnabrück. I was really disappointed. It was, as you've mentioned, not a pretty game to watch, and if you listen to DAZN, Osnabrück is now part of Ostwestfalen, so they moved from Lower Saxony to North Rhine-Westphalia, which I did not know before, but here you go. Welcome to Ostwestfalen. Osnabrück, there are three clubs at the moment in the top three leagues that are Ostwestfalen, which is Bielefeld, Paderborn, and Fern. Osnabrück is not in that mix, but okay. One last note. Not pretty seen at the end from Luke Ehorst, who was set off because he spit towards his opponent. I think it was John Patrick Strauss as well. Mm-hmm. Not completely sure. He was banned for 2 games and a fine by the DFB today. So he will be missing. He will return after that, what we call English week. But Osnabrück really has to find their way back to the way they were playing at the beginning of the season, where we were all a bit surprised on how well they performed, although they Daniel Thun was gone. Korte did a good job at the beginning, but now, I mean, Auer didn't even need to put on a very good display, and I thought this is the biggest front you can make towards Osnabrück.
Yeah, stark contrast to the start of the season where we were rightfully singing the praises of Grotter and co, but 4 defeats in their last 5, and now, we were talking about them potentially being a dark, a rank outsider as a team who could maybe cause a bit of damage in that top half, but now they're only 7 points above the drop. Now, they've still got plenty of games, they've got 17 games remaining, but it's back to reality, unfortunately, for them. They need to again start picking up points against the teams around them if they're really a chance of just avoiding the drop. It was a good opportunity against an Auer side that is notoriously bad at home, but one thing that we've seen during the COVID period of football is certain teams really struggling on their own grass, and Osnabrück is one of those teams, a team that, if you looked at their Dritte Liga form, early Zweite Bundesliga form, they were very hard to beat. Very beatable in front of nobody, and they've showed that. The Luke Ehorst incident, just to quickly touch on that, I haven't seen the incident, but if it was spitting on an opponent, wasn't it Kabak who got 6 games for spitting on a Werder Bremen player? I'm not entirely sure, Eva.
Yeah, but the situation was a bit different because I think, Kabak spit on a person that was lying down. If you compare it to the Thuram situation, it was really face to face. And without in some ways defending Ehos, but it was, if you compare it to the situation, it was different. It wasn't that, it was disrespectful, but it wasn't aimed at some body parts of their opponents, which was by Thuram, for example, which is just, we live in a global pandemic. Like, this is already disgusting if we're not living in a global pandemic, but if we do, please don't do that. Please don't ever spit on other people.
No. I'm just curious, that's all. The only the intent of the action, which the action itself should never be necessary. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, like, how that continues to be legislated. I would assume intent is really going to be the key, what really drives how many games a player gets in those situations. Let's move on to St. Pauli. I know St. Pauli fans have waited to hear what we've thought of them this weekend, or last weekend, sorry. Another win, two on the bounce, and they haven't done that since their match day 23 and match day 24 wins. They beat Hamburg and Osnabrück in that time. A plucky performance. I don't think they were the best team in this game by any stretch, but goals from Guido Burgstaller and Omar Marmoush, both getting their second goals in St. Pauli colours. And for the first time in a long time, they are out of the bottom three. Eva, we've teased it during this episode how important the win was for them. And they just did an unbelievably good job of just converting the minimal chances they had.
Yeah, would fully agree with you here. I thought that, especially after the 1-0, Ringsburg had a couple of chances, which, for example, Stojanovic saved very well. And then there was that one chance and at the beginning of the second half. And then as an answer, immediately Marmoush scored. And I think that was very, very important for the team, because after that, you could kind of see that they were not falling apart, which we have seen throughout the season. And that's why this win is not only important for just if you look at the table constellation, but also, yeah, just mentally as well, as this being their first win with a clean sheet, if I'm not mistaken. So that is really, really important. And I mean, Stojanovic was very good on goal. Safe-wise, he could work a bit on his accuracy concerning long balls, because only 4 of his 28 long balls were actually accurate. He could probably work on. I thought that Regensburg was missing the efficiency they had in a couple of games before, and they really have to look out, because they're in that mix as well with a couple of other teams like Darmstadt and Sandhausen, who are not benefiting from St. Pauli getting stronger, you could say. And for St. Pauli, really, really good, because Würzburg did not pick up points. So, as well as Braunschweig, so kind of they could get a bit of points between them and those two last places, which is really important for them going into this second half of the season, as well as in getting into the English week.
Absolutely. I think what's important for them as well is that the teams that are below them have significantly worse goal differences. And when you're in a relegation fight, as St. Pauli have been for most of the season, the fact that they've been not as bad as other teams, they've been able to get goals and not be as bad as Sandhausen, Braunschweig and Würzburg, it keeps them in a better situation, that if there is that tiebreaker, they are in a good situation where they can avoid having to deal with, okay, well, our goal difference is better. It's not like we need 10 goals to beat someone to avoid being in 16th or going down. So, yeah, I think Regensburg overall were better from watching this game. Really lacked the clinicalness in front of goal. I know they've brought in David Otto on loan from Hoffenheim. His loan with Heidenheim ended at the start of the calendar year, and Regensburg are taking a chance on him. I think he's very talented. He showed flashes in Heidenheim colours, but you know, didn't do enough with the opportunities he had, and the emergence of Kulvetter really put pay to his chances this season. So an important fixture, or important signing for them, because they will be looking for another striker who can find the back of the net. Our last game is Paderborn and Würzburg. This game ended a goal to nil. Dennis Sabini getting his 7th of the campaign. There's not really a lot of talk about this game. It was tight. It was cagey. But for Paderborn especially, it's a win. You know, they've won three of their last five. You know, they're in mid-table. They look fine. It's a weird one for them because this is not the usual Paderborn we know. It's either riding high or really, really riding the lows. They're having just a middle of the road season so far, and I think as a club, I think they're happy with the concept of not feeling like they're under pressure of going down, or even to a lesser extent going up.
Yeah, I have to say, equally to the Arsenal our game, this wasn't a pretty game to watch either. I thought that Würzburg did too less to actually hold on to that three undefeated games in a row strike kind of thing. Paderborn did what they had to do, but not more, which I was a bit disappointed about, because this would be one of the games if you want to, just secure points going into the English week, have 3 points in the back. It could have gone wrong at some stage, because there was the last chance by Princess Sayavusu. It wasn't a good pass from Antti Ajayi, but still, you should use those chances, especially if you don't want to be in either position thinking about promotion. Well, I mean, you want to think about promotion, but I think it's safe to say they will have nothing to do with that. Secure early enough that they can bring enough distance between them and clubs that we talked about in the last 8 games. And for Würzburg, it's getting tougher and tougher. I mean, we have similar situations in the Bundesliga. Sorry for that, Matthew. But we've seen that there, that you really have to pick up points, because you can't wait for the other teams to stay in the same position that they are. And we've seen that with St. Pauli. We have yet to see that with Braunschweig, of course. But the other clubs are picking up points. And at the moment for them, it's not enough to not only not lose games, but they have to actually win one. And I have to say, this was a game where they could have at least taken a point out of if they would have invested a bit more, in my opinion.
Yeah, the thing is for them that they have to try and win on a cold Tuesday night in Aue, and that's not particularly easy to start the Rückrunde. And yeah, very much like the Bundesliga situation with Schalke. They got no help on the weekend with Braunschweig losing. They were most likely going to get that, but Sandhausen getting a point against a good Bochum side, and St. Pauli winning, you know, now the task is even harder. I think they're 5 points adrift from Braunschweig, 6 points from Sandhausen. That's a significant margin. If they can't start picking up points, 9 as a total is really hard to even double that. We talk about the number 40 is almost guaranteed safety. This season, I'd be willing to bet that maybe 33 would be enough for safety this season. They're in trouble. And I think we've known this for a while, much like Wiesbaden last season. But all they can really do is just cause havoc and see what happens, and you never know, they may pull off the great escape. Only time will tell. That's the end of this week's edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. We won't be recording for the match day 18 fixtures, but I may come up with something else and talk about that maybe on Twitter or something, figure out something out. But we will be back the next week to discuss all the action from the weekend, that is match day 19. Until next time.